Oh man, how fun was that? Awesome, man. Well, hey, my name's Curtis. Great to have you join us this weekend. Those of you here with us in the room, those of you tuning online, great to have you join us from wherever you may be joining us from. And man, great song, right? I found joy in my life. We've had those moments where perhaps somebody just drops into our life and just surprises us. And you've probably had moments like that, whether it was a romantic relationship or perhaps somebody just dropped into your life and you just look back and you go, I don't know that I would have made it through that season if it wasn't for him, if it wasn't for her, or perhaps for that group of people that just showed up and you wouldn't be where you are without them. And you know, for some of you, perhaps it's your parents that you feel like kind of set you up for success, and you may not have been grateful for them back in those early days, but perhaps you're grateful for them right now. For others of us, it's mentors. I know for me, I've had a number of people that just randomly kind of dropped into my life, at least that's what it felt like. One of those guys was a guy by the name of Russ Ullman, and he served as my coach, kind of still serves as my coach, and he's a guy who about 10 years ago just dropped through a random moment, and he's taught me and coached me and helped me understand organizational scaling and casting vision and funding vision. And when he comes to town, we just have a cup of coffee and he'll sit down and he'll go, Kurt, what's the next big thing? And sometimes I'm like, Russ, I don't have a next big thing. I really don't know what that is. And he will push me to what the next big thing is God wants to do. When I think of people that have dropped in my life, I think of people like Russ. I've also had a number of other people, a guy by the name of Don Collins, who when I first experienced my call to ministry at Anderson University, he was our campus pastor, and we just had a unique moment where our lives intersected, and he became a mentor for a number of years from that point forward. There's a guy by the name of Ed Nelson, who was my first senior pastor, and he ironically dropped into my life. I was interning at a church out of college, and he was hired as the senior pastor right as I was about to leave and go somewhere else. He said, I want you to stay, and he taught me so many things about ministry earlier in my life, but also about leading through difficult seasons of ministry, which has really come in helpful over these past number of years especially. And then there's guys like Dr. Greg Wines, who kind of dropped into our family's lives a number of years ago, but for me personally, he's been a coach, a mentor. He's been my counselor as of late. He's just kind of helped me understand, you know, how do we continue to go after the vision and how do we take care of ourselves and self-understanding. And I'm telling you, I wouldn't be where I am without people that just kind of randomly dropped in that I didn't plan. And we all can probably think of people that kind of were those like just at the right time kind of people that have somehow intersected our lives. Perhaps there's opportunities that we have that we just wouldn't have if it wasn't for them. Or maybe they dropped in and just gave us a moment of encouragement or perhaps correction. And maybe we didn't appreciate it at the time, but we do now. And so just real quick, anybody come to mind for you? Just make a mental note. Who is that person? And have you thanked them? Do they know what they have meant to you? We're going to come back to that here in just a moment. So, man, we're in part three of this series, which I've been enjoying. Faith fuel. I mean, that never gets old for me. You know, we're talking about how to fuel our faith when we're running on empty. And kind of the premise behind this whole series is really that, you know, in the first century, Jesus invited people to follow him. And he kind of had an agenda for his first century followers. He has an agenda for you and I in the 21st century. And that is he wants us to be people of this big, amazing, unshakable faith. And not the kind of faith that you just keep in your head, but the kind that gets into our lives and our work and shows up when we're at home with our families and out in the community and, you know, serving and recreating, that just kind of comes out of who we are and it changes things. It comes out of some of the confidence that we have in our Heavenly Father. And let's be honest, faith that doesn't change things. In fact, Jesus' brother once talked about this. James actually said, that kind of faith, that's dead. It's actually useless. The kind of faith that just stays in our head and doesn't go anywhere, change anything. And so the idea of this kind of earthy, gritty, real life, like show up in my life kind of faith, it kind of explains Jesus' invitation to his followers, which his invitation wasn't just believe me or believe in me. His initial invitation was just follow me. I just want you to follow me. In fact, that invitation hasn't changed. That invitation is still the same invitation today. That when we step into our environments in our life, in our day in, day out life, there's something in us as we follow Jesus, as we interact with people in our lives, that our hearts and our lives are just different. Now, it's kind of funny because the church leaders came along like in the first, second century, and they kind of like watered down the whole thing. And they turned follow me into just, well, just believe in me. And yes, Jesus wants us to believe in him. It's just that, you know, he's not interested. His goal was not to get us in a room and be like, oh, we believe, and rah-rah about how much we believe. His goal was that we would believe in him and that that would inform how we follow him and would actually make a difference in our lives. And if that wasn't the case, I mean, the first century Christians would have never made it out of the first century. But, you know, think about that for a moment. I mean, let's be honest. Believe in me is a lot easier, right? Like, if I just have to, okay, let me believe in Jesus, like, that's a lot less demanding, a lot less rigorous. It requires a lot less of me. But see, believing without actually following and putting into practice actually just leaves us right where we are. And Jesus didn't want to do that. I mean, Jesus didn't merely invite people to believe in him, because as we know, that doesn't make a difference. He knows it's in the doing and in the following that actually makes the difference. And so belief that just kind of stays in our head, and we've probably experienced this at some point or another. I mean, it just kind of makes our faith feeble and frail and fragile, because, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. And before long, we kind of feel like we don't have faith, and we start losing our faith, and we find ourselves running on empty. So, you know, we've been talking about how faith is a muscle. And just like any muscle in the body, like, you got to work it. I mean, if you don't work it, you're going to lose it. And perhaps that's part of your story. Perhaps as we've been going through this series, you know, you've been connecting dots and you're like, gosh, I kind of lost faith, or my faith has just been running on empty. And it's not like there was a moment where you just decided that. It's just that, you know, you haven't been exercising it. And so it just kind of goes away. And so Jesus, he invited us to follow him and to wake up every single day asking this question that we've been looking at. And you guys have been looking at this question. Some of you have been screenshotting it. I've seen your cameras up over the last few weeks, which is awesome. You know, if you need to reword it so it fits better for you, you know, do whatever you need to do. But the question is, what would I do? Meaning, how would I live? Not just what happens in my head, but how does my life go? How would I respond to people, to him, to her, to this difficult situation in my life? What are the things I would start, or what are the things I might avoid if I just woke up every single day absolutely confident that God was actually with me? And of course we go, okay, how do I do that? This, like, how do I actually accomplish that? Well, we've been looking at the ingredients. What are the ingredients that if you were to put them in a bowl and kind of mix them and knead them and kind of work them all together, you know, when you see faith in other people that's just unshakable, and you go, man, I don't know if I could go through that experience and come out the other side with a faith, or I don't know that I could go through that kind of tragedy, or I don't know if I could go through that kind of loss. We've just discovered that there's five things, and there's actually more than five, but these five things always show up in people's faith story. These are the things that fuel and refuel and build up and give us this amazing faith. So we've been unpacking these five things. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the first one, which is practical teaching. And this one's important because whenever you hear somebody's faith story, it usually goes like this. There was a time where I went to this one church, or I was invited to this Bible study. I'd been in studies before, but I was invited to a small group on my campus, and for the first time, the scripture just made sense because there was practical teaching, there was practical application, and I knew how to date or how to stay married, or, you know, how my character, I need to put that in front of my desires and my wants. And I just knew what to do with it. They showed me what to do. They gave handles to me. It's like, this is what it means and looks like to follow Jesus. And I didn't always know how it was going to go. I mean, I didn't know how, if I did follow, how it was going to work out, but I did it anyway. And when I did that, when I activated my faith by simply just following, God's faithfulness on the back end kind of intersected my life. And I experienced him in a unique way. And in that moment, when I do that, my faith grew. And then the second one we looked at last weekend, we talked specifically about a personal ministry. How, again, whenever you hear somebody's faith story, oftentimes one of the things they'll say is, you know, the first time that I kind of stepped out of my comfort zone and I served somebody, the first time I went on a mission trip, or the first time I jumped into, you know, giving to the Joy Box. You weren't expecting that right there, were you? Yeah, first time you gave to the Joy Box. Yeah, you know, it's like I didn't know how it was going to go. I didn't know how the money was going to come and repopulate my account. I didn't know how God was going to get me through. When I stepped into that fifth grade small group to lead those boys, or, you know, that third grade, you know, small group, or that high school group of girls, I just felt this nudge that this is what I was supposed to do. And I kind of felt inadequate. I mean, they hand me this Bible lesson, and I'm like, I don't even know the Bible that well. I mean, these fifth graders probably know it better than I do. I'm probably going to look like the one that doesn't know much. But on the other side, when I push through that inadequacy, guess what happens? We experience God's faithfulness. And again, our faith grows. So tonight, we're going to look at the third item, the third tool, the third kind of catalyst that grows our faith. Now, this one's really kind of cool. This one's called providential relationships. And again, anytime you talk to someone, you hear their faith story, oftentimes you're going to hear something like, well, there was this woman that just showed up, and somehow our lives intersected. Or there was this guy, and he just met me where I was and understood what I was going through. Or there was this group of people, or I met this couple, or these women, or those men when I joined that group. Or perhaps it was like, you know, I was a teacher and there's this new kid in my class, or, you know, somebody moved into the neighborhood, you know, right next door to us, and we found out they were Christians, and that kind of weirded us out a little bit. But, you know, they're the nicest people. And before long, they invited us to church, and we'd kind of been around faith, but these people were just dropped into our life. It wasn't planned. And again, when people tell these stories, you know, she showed up. He just kind of took me under his wing and mentored me. Or these girls on my campus invited me to a small group, didn't even know what a small group was. Or perhaps it was a coach that just mentored you. I mean, it could go on and on and on. But here's the point. When you consider their story and you consider your story, it's as if God just kind of dropped them into your life. And you didn't even realize it at the time, which is why it's called providential relationships. But there was something that began to happen. There was a change that began to happen in you. And again, there's no way this could have happened. It's almost like God divinely brought that person into your life. That's why it's providential, because if you would have planned it, it wouldn't be providential. So we end up experiencing these kind of defining moments, right? And it's called a defining moment because, well, it's defining. Like there was something that really changed. And usually defining moments always involve people, other people. And sometimes the defining moments are good. We're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad they showed up. Sometimes they're like, man, I wish I would have never had that moment. But it shouldn't be a surprise to us that God uses people. Even in unique, unexpected moments, he uses relationships to grow our faith. So this is kind of how Christianity began. Do you know how Christianity began? It began because God sent his son into the world. He sent his son to interact with us, and he sent his son to change us. I mean, that's the gospel right there. That's the good news of Jesus, that the word, that God became flesh in the form of Jesus, and he showed up in the lives of people. In fact, anybody's life, as you do a precursory read of the gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, anybody's life who crossed paths with Jesus, just intersected Jesus' life, man, that was a defining moment. And those people went on, and their lives intersected with other people, and theirs intersected with another set of people, and on, people had defining moments. Now, I want you to hear one real quick little moment that we find in the Gospels, and this is kind of a cool little narrative out of Jesus' life that doesn't get a lot of attention. Jesus comes to this young guy by the name of Philip, and he says to Philip, same phrase we often hear, he says, hey, Philip, I want you to follow me. And it was the same thing he'd said to Peter and Andrew and James and John. But instead of just going, okay, I'll follow you, Jesus, Philip was like, okay, just a minute. I need you to wait here. I'll be back in just a moment. And Philip goes to get his buddy Nathanael. And he says to Nathanael, you're never going to believe this, but I think I just met the Messiah. And Nathanael's skeptical. He's like, yeah, right, and I'm Batman. Try again. He's like, we've been waiting on the Messiah for like hundreds of years. All right? He's like, out of curiosity, just who is this Messiah? I've got a lot of questions. He's like, I don't know that I believe that this is really what you say it is. And Philip's just like, well, it's Jesus of Nazareth, which makes Nathanael more skeptical. He's like, listen, no Messiah comes out of Nazareth. That is not the way things work. In fact, here's how he says it. He said, Nazareth, can anything good come from there? But we see here, Nathanael is not interested. He's like, yep, not interested. I don't believe it. And if Philip would have operated like most of us, if he would have just been like, okay, well, then you just go ahead and live your itty bitty little life. I mean, I was trying to help you maybe, you know, tap into something bigger than yourself, but that's cool. You just do what you want to do. You know, most of us would have kind of done that, you know, but he didn't do that. He's like, you know, at some point you're going to wish that you would have leaned into this thing. Nathanael, you're going to wish that you would have, I mean, this is like Apple. You're going to wish you would have bought Apple stock. You're going to wish you would have leaned into this moment with the Messiah right here, but you missed it. All right, I tried. But see, Philip, he wasn't going to have that. He's like, I'm not giving up on this. And he comes back to him and he's like, listen, I don't know about messiahs and where they come from. I don't really know about, you know, the whole Nazareth thing. He's like, look, just, and here's what he says next. He says, just come and see, Philip said. Just come and see. Tell you what, that's one of the greatest little invitations right there. Just come and see. And Nathanael goes, and he experiences the character and the amazing grace and mercy of Jesus the Messiah, and it wasn't at all what he expected. And later on, Nathanael thanks Philip. For the rest of his life, he's like grateful to him because he got a ringside seat. Think about this. He got a ringside seat because of that invitation to see the activity of God play out in front of him. And he would have missed it. He would have missed it if it wasn't for Philip, because Philip didn't give up. I mean, just think about this. You can picture this in your mind, right? I mean, just think about all the amazing moments that happened in front of Nathanael and Philip throughout their lives. And every time one of those happens, Nathanael just leans over to Philip and he's like, dude, I just want to thank you. I'm so glad you invited me into this. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen any of this. Which kind of reminds me of something that happened in my backyard a few years back. See, when we moved to Fishers, and we were kind of dropped into this neighborhood as we were coming to start Cross Point. We began to get connected with some of our neighbors, and my brother and his wife, Mark and Barb, lived right behind us, and we kind of got connected through them to some of their neighbors because they lived there before us, and it was just kind of, hey, just come and check out what we're doing. Come and see what Jesus is doing, and ironically, over time, a number of the neighbors increasingly started coming to Cross Point. In fact, many of our neighbors, all of our adjacent neighbors at one point were coming here. Many of them still do, and we had one couple, it was kind of funny, where there was a house that somebody moved out, and this new couple moved in, and my kids were so excited. They're like, Mom and Dad, we have new neighbors, and they have kids our age. You need to come out and meet them, and so we go out to meet the neighbors, and we're introducing ourselves, and they're like, yeah, we apparently, there's some pastor that lives around here, and like everybody around here goes to his church. We just want to know who he is. I'm kind of like, guilty. Like, that's me. And they're like, oh, you're the pastor. And they're like, you are not what we expected. I'm like, guilty again. And so anyway, they started coming to Cross Point, and then they eventually moved to another community. But the point is, all these neighbors were connecting here, but I want you to hear a bit about one of our neighbors and just the way providential relationships played out and have continued to play out. So here's a little bit of a story that I had a chance to capture and share with you from my friend Dave. Take a look at this. Well, hey, Dave, thanks for joining us in this conversation today. You know, we kind of dropped into your lives in 2006, into the backyard living right behind you. But before that happened, when you and Angie moved into your home a couple years before that, you kind of had a dream for what you kind of had a vision for in your backyard. What would that look like?
Not how it ended up, for sure. so we built in 2003. And, you know, I remember her and I standing in the backyard, and all the houses were kind of done around us, but we weren't looking at those houses like, I wonder who our neighbors are going to be. We wonder, are we going to like them? Are they going to like us? I mean, it was our first home, and what we were envisioning was a fence and a dog or two and a couple kids running around. And it wasn't that we didn't like community, but we just weren't thinking that far ahead, you know? But then, yeah, that kind of changed in a big way. Fast forward to where we all connected, and we had Adejuas, and then the Walters, and your brother and Barb next door. And we never built that fence, and we couldn't imagine ever even building one.
Well, I mean, so when we moved in, you found out I was a pastor. Maybe you wanted to build that fence, but what were your first thoughts? Like when you were like, "Oh gosh, we got a pastor living behind."
No, it wasn't like a bad thing. But then when I saw you, I thought, "How can he be a pastor?" I thought he's way younger than I am. And I was like, "So this may end up being kind of cool." But you know, again, at that point, I was just kind of cynical about the church because my career, my job, tend to, you know, clash with a lot of, you know, religious people.
You're like doing like undercover selling something illegal or something?
No, I sold wine and spirits.
Which typically might not be okay among a Christian tribe.
Right, exactly. And so that is the part that kind of kept us from connecting more sooner because I was afraid, you know, and I didn't want to be looked at as something that was a bad influence on my neighbors or be judged by somebody, especially, you know, an authority of a pastor.
So I know the original invitation didn't necessarily come from us. I mean, we met you, but that really came from my brother and his wife, Barb, who had a little longer relationship with you guys. What was that invitation? What was the invitation? What did they say when they invited you?
This is before I knew anything about really them or that you, his brother, were a pastor, was going to be living behind me. I remember I gave them little bottles of champagne. And I'm like, when then later when I found out that they went to church and they were a brother's pastor, I thought that may not have been a good thing. So that was, you know, 2005 or 6. You guys had already started the exploratory part of starting Crosspoint. And, you know, Mark would tell me, he said, hey, listen, we're thinking about starting this church. My brother's going to start this church here in Fishers. And I'd be like, oh, okay, that's cool, you know, and you know, didn't dwell much on it because, again, I didn't want to get too invested or get myself into a situation where I felt obligated. And, but yeah, as it came closer and, you know, we talked and then you guys all started connecting, the Dejuas, you, Mark, in the backyard and having cookouts and always laughing and all these kids playing, right? And I remember peeking out of the window thinking, I want to join them. Angie's like, well, why don't we? And I was like, because I'm afraid, you know, I'm just afraid. And eventually, and I don't remember when it was, I don't remember, but we started coming out and connecting more. And then eventually we decided to come to Crosspoint in 2009.
Mm-hmm. And what happened when you came? I mean, so you came, you got the invitation, you showed up.
Yep.
And what happened?
We were playing Prince, When Doves Cry, Brett Bowman, who helps us out here in sound. He did some kind of a little remix, and Angie and I are sitting there looking at it, I go, what is going on here? You know, we're in church and we're hearing Prince. And then the second clue that resonated with us was PJ and the band played One from U2. And then the third thing and the final thing was you played a video, an interview with one of Dallas Cowboy football player about his testimony. And because I'm a lifelong Cowboys fan, that really hit home. And I was like, we're here. This is it. This is it. I'm not going anywhere else.
And I think the cool piece for me sitting here, I mean, obviously this has meant a lot to us and to you guys as well, but it's not just for us. And so last weekend, we heard Ken's story, who serves as part of our Crosspoint Student Ministries team. And he's here because of you. He mentioned you in his story.
I know.
Talk a little bit about like how that all came about.
I got a charger, and I was just looking up on Instagram and finding car clubs, you know, and found this Indy Mopar car club. And connected with him, chatted with him, and so then we met because it was actually something on the car, like a modification on the car he wanted to check out. So the first time I ever met him, we met at across from the Kroger at the LA Fitness right there on 116th Street. And so we connected there, and then we just stayed in touch. And then we got to doing some charity events with Car Club and hanging out more. And he asked me about church, or I would talk about church or everything, and he started asking me, well, where do you go? And I would tell him, and I was like, you should check it out. I mean, he's like, yeah, I don't know if I'm ready. I'm kind of in not a bad spot, but I just kind of got burned. And I said, well, I get that. And, you know, Crosspoint will be here for whenever you want. And I was like, but you really should check it out. I said, because it's restored my faith in church. And it's restored other people that I know's faith in church. So you should check it out. And eventually he did, and he got quickly involved. And so it's just been amazing.
Dave, thank you for being open when God dropped us into your life in the backyard and vice versa, because it's grown us, and I know it's grown you, and I'm so appreciative for that. Man, let's thank Dave for sharing for us, man. You know, I love what he said, where he said, it restored my faith in the church. What does he mean by that? You know what he means is it restored my faith in people of faith. It restored my faith in followers, the tribe, the community, the ecclesia known as the church. I mean, that's the power of providential relationships right there. You don't choose them. You don't go out and create a providential relationship. Otherwise, it's not providential. I mean, it's a created relationship. It's not just one that God divinely kind of drops into your life. And so you can't go create these relationships, but here's what you can do. You can, and we all should, do what we can to get in relationships with people that are headed in the same spiritual direction. That's the part we can do. Because being in proximity, as we're going to see here in just a moment, this is one of the things we can do to ensure that our faith grows. In fact, I want to take a look at the writer of Hebrews. He saw something really fascinating on this and how he kind of encourages us to lean in on this. Hebrews is a book kind of near the end of the New Testament. It's not even a book, really. It's this like long, complicated sermon, teaching, but we call it a book because it's in the New Testament. And there's one section where the author is urging these Galilean and Judean, kind of basically the sons and daughters of Abraham, to not give up on their faith in Jesus the Messiah. See, they'd believed in God, but the whole Jesus thing is new. And so the writer's like cheering them on, don't give up, don't give up, you can do it, come on, don't give up on your faith. And so here's what he says as he urges them in Hebrews chapter 10. He says, let us meaning these people that are seeking you, God, that are seeking Jesus, that are following Jesus, trying to understand what that looks like, let us hold, and I love this word right here, hold unswervingly. Now, we've all driven swervingly at some point or another, right? Like, we know what that means. He says, let's hold unswervingly, meaning unswervingly is like a direct line. Hold to the hope we profess. For he who promised, and take a look, here's our word right here. He who promised is faithful. Kind of like, hey, there's going to be seasons of your life that you're going to go through, and they're not going to be easy. They're going to be very, very difficult seasons of life. Just don't give up on your faith. Don't give up on your faith. And then he says this. And he says, and let us consider how we may, and again, here's another one of our phrases, how we may spur one another on. This is fascinating. He's saying, if you want to have amazing faith, if you want to have a full faith, if you want your faith to not be running on fumes, if you want to have an active, alive faith that's unshakable, you're going to need other people in your life. And guess what? Other people in your life are going to need you. He's like, I just want you to reflect a bit on how can you spur on people that are around you? And then he kind of wraps it up, and this is the best part of all, this little phrase, because he says it's not just a faith that's here in our head, like, oh, I believe. He says, no, that we spur one another on toward love, and look at this next phrase, good deeds. I mean, he's talking about an active, gritty, earthy faith, real world faith, where our lives intersect God's faithfulness, and our faith gets fueled as a result of that. So he's like, I want you to spur one another on. I want you to keep getting together. I want you to hang on to that faith. I want you to hang on to that faith in such a way that it shows up in the world when you're in the day in and day out real world living. And then he gives us one more phrase, and this may be the place where you can put a finger and go, oh my gosh, this right here is maybe the interrupter for me. Perhaps this next thing he says is the gas guzzler that's really kind of caused you, if you feel like you're running on fumes with your faith, that's led to that. He says, not giving up meeting together. Now let me just say, for those of you sitting in the room right now and those of you tuning in online right now, don't underestimate the power of meeting together. Don't underestimate the power of being in proximity with one another. I mean, even if you're tuning in online, the fact you're making time to be here, you know, perhaps you're not in the area, perhaps you're out of the area, perhaps there's other reasons, perhaps you can be in this space. There's something about being in proximity, shoulder to shoulder, in space with one another. There's something about being connected even through the airwaves. Don't underestimate the power of having regular rhythms of being connected. I mean, think back to early 2020 when the pandemic hit. When all of us, everything got upended. And, you know, even in this space, if you were here at that time, we didn't have services for like 2.5, 3 months. And all of our small groups stopped meeting in person and went virtual. And we're all trying to figure out new mediums. And we stayed connected. It wasn't shoulder to shoulder, but we still said, hey, we've got to learn ways to stay connected. New mediums, we're still figuring those out. He says, let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but, and again, here it is again, encouraging one another. You know what it means to encourage one another? To encourage means to put courage in someone else. I encourage you when I put courage in you. There's something that happens when we're in proximity, when we're connected, when we put courage in one another. Now the question is why? Why is that so important? Well, because see, when it comes to our faith, when it comes to recognizing God's faithfulness in the day in, day out, earthy, gritty, everyday, real life moments of our faith, those moments when we feel urged to do something and we don't know how it's gonna go, proximity matters. Proximity matters. Proximity and relationship, these are faith builders. Now here's an observation, and this may be a part of your story. It may explain why, if you feel like you're running on empty with your faith, that's the case. Or if you feel like, gosh, I used to have faith, and I just feel like, gosh, I just don't know that I have much faith anymore. Perhaps this is why. See, people drift from their community of faith before they drift away from their faith. I mean, you don't drift away from faith because you read, you know, one of Richard Dawkins' books, or you heard something in philosophy class. I mean, certainly there's an intellectual side to faith. We talk about that here at Crosspoint all the time. But the actual experience is people tend to drift away from their community of faith before they drift away from their faith. And this is what the writer of Hebrews is trying to get at right here. And another way to say it is this: people lose faith when they lose contact with people of faith. See, this is why if we allow ourselves to drift away from people of faith, people who are running in the same direction after the same thing, even though we're at different places, it's only a matter of time before we begin to lose faith. Because see, there's something powerful about watching other people and seeing God work in their lives. There's something about that that boosts our lives, that boosts our faith. We realize, man, I'm not on an island. I'm not the only one going through this. This is one of the reasons I love my men's group. Every week when my men's group gets together, these 6-8 guys, I mean, it's not just that we're learning from teaching or instruction. We're hearing each other's stories. We're hearing how God showed up in their life. I'm getting encouraged because that might not be happening in my life right now, but it's happening in somebody else's life, and I see that, which all points to the fact that the relationships are critical to a fueled faith. I mean, think about this. When we see God's faithfulness in somebody else's life, it's easier to trust God with our life, right? I mean, when we see God sustaining grace, or when we see God sustaining activity in somebody else's life or circumstances, it's easier for us to trust him with ours. I mean, when we're walking through the valley, or when our life's not going up and to the right, I mean, this is what sustains us. See, most of us, we've experienced providential relationships and unexpected relationships that have kind of dropped into our life in this way. See, the problem is you can't plan them. So I want to give us a couple applications, a couple next steps, a couple walkouts, things we can do to kind of grow this in our lives. And so this is interesting because there's certain things you and I can't do. There's certain things we can't do. We can't create a providential relationship, but there are roles you can play, and there are things you can do and you should do. And so number one, first thing is to stay connected. We've got to stay connected. All right, staying connected to a community of faith, to people running in the same direction, this fuels and it builds our faith. But it also does something else. See, it positions you and I. We heard this in Dave's story. We heard it in Ken's story last weekend because Ken mentioned Dave. It also positions us to play a role in somebody else's faith story. Now, when we began Crosspoint 15 years ago, we kind of knew this. I mean, we kind of knew that this is a catalyst that grows faith, which is why one of our values here is life together, living life together, doing life together, being in community. We're not made to live alone, out of connection and relationship. Now, you can't create a providential relationship. You can't go out and just be like, oh, there it is right there. Otherwise, it's not providential. But you can increase the potential of falling into providential relationships. And this is why we're always, always talking about getting into small groups. We want you in small groups. Not because you don't have anything to do, and not because you need another night of the week taken up, not because of that at all, but simply because doing life together with other people heading in the same direction, it increases the potential of you falling into providential relationships. I mean, I'm gonna tell you something, I can't imagine my life. I can't imagine what Julie and my life would look like without Dave and Angie in our lives. And we lived next, you know, back to back for 12 years. I can imagine. We don't live close now. We shared small group earlier this year together. I can imagine our lives. It would be a loss to me. It sounds a little selfish. It would truly be a loss to us. And when you think about the circle of providential relationships, how my brother and his wife Barb introduced Dave and Angie to us, and Dave and Angie eventually, this was over a span of 2 or 3 years, got connected to Crosspoint, re-engaged with people of faith. And then think about a few years later, the role he played, we heard from Ken last weekend through the car club. Ken began to re-engage with faith. It took him about a year before he acted on the invitation. But for us, it would be a loss if none of that would have taken place, because guess what? Ken is now my son's small group leader. So my son would be feeling that loss. I mean, just think about the way God uses relationships in our lives. I mean, many of you could tell a similar story. So organizationally, I mean, we organize toward the potential of trying to foster providential relationships, because this is one of the things that grows our faith. For instance, another way this happens is with CSM, Crosspoint Student Ministries. You know, if you volunteer at Crosspoint Student Ministries, our junior high guys leaders, for instance, will most always move up to senior high. When those boys move up to senior high, they travel with them. We want to keep those kids in relationship with the adults in their lives. All right, and every now and then we'll hear students be like, oh my gosh, the teaching at CSM was amazing. Something just radically changed my life. But almost 90, 95% of the time, what we'll hear is, oh my gosh, those adult leaders, I tell you what, my small group leader was there when nobody else showed up. My small group leader, I don't know how I would have got through this season without him. I don't know how. I mean, my parents, they lost their mind. I mean, I didn't know what to do with them. but fortunately, my small group leader, they met with me and kind of put everything into context. That's the power of providential relationships. Now, let me just say to those of you who are parents, as a parent who's raised 4 kids through our kids and student ministry, still raising 3 of them that are still involved in it. Listen, you do yourself a disfavor to not have your kids here. I mean, not so we can count kids. I mean, we're not trying to get any awards on that front. It's just that your kids' faith is dependent on 2 things. It's 1, dependent on your faith, and 2, it's dependent on the faithful adults that build into them. Another application, another one of our next steps. Again, if you can follow along in your app, pull out your next steps. These are things I'm going to ask you to act on in a moment. You'll hear us say all the time, okay, invite somebody to come sit with you. Right? This is giving someone a potentially life-changing invitation. All right, think about that. Think about how a single invitation to come sit with you, that could be a catalyst in someone's faith journey. Hey, just come sit with me. Come sit with me. You heard it from Dave. Hey, just come hang out. Come check out Crosspoint. This could be the first step in somebody discovering or rediscovering their faith. Just invite someone. And why not? I mean, you never know what's on the other side of that invitation. But think about it. Think about it. When you invite them, and eventually, months later, year later, they come and they begin to sit with you and take in what God's plan is for their life, maybe experience Christ. They sit here, and then one day you watch them step into the waters of baptism or walk through the waters of baptism. You know what happens to your faith in that moment? Let me tell you something. It doesn't shrink. It gets bigger. So again, back to the applications. During this season, I mean, if you have felt like you've kind of drifted away, or you feel like, you know, man, I've just kind of gotten unplugged with people of faith, people heading in the same spiritual direction, man, I just encourage you, get reconnected. Even if it's a little awkward, find a small group. Jump on our app or our web. Get into a small group. Our staff team's happy to help you. If you know somebody that leads a small group, say, hey, can I come join you? If you know somebody that's disconnected, you know, reach out to them. Say, hey, I'd love, just come sit with me. Come join me. I mean, I send texts, emails out every week to people that God just puts on my heart and mind that I haven't seen in a while. And you might be going, oh, Kurt, I never got one of those from you. Well, you probably didn't. I mean, I learned a long time ago, I'm not going to not do what I do those moments just because I can't do it for everybody, but I will do for one what I wish I could do for everybody. Because sometimes that one, it makes all the difference in. So invite them to your small group. You have no idea what might be on the other side of that invitation. And see, here's what happens when you make that simple invitation. When they tell their story, they're probably going to talk about you. I mean, just like Ken last weekend talked about Dave. I mean, they're going to talk about you. And who knows, when you tell your faith story, you may actually talk about them, because proximity matters. And then here's the last walkout. Last one I'll give you. There's way more we could talk about. This will be the last one. Are there people whose stories have shaped and strengthened your faith? Who are those people? Do they know the role that they've played? Have you told them how important that was to you? If you haven't, man, this week, maybe you know, tell them. Drop an email, a call, a text. Tell them the role that they played. I just did that earlier today with one of my mentors that I mentioned earlier. Listen, you may not have seen them in a couple years or 5 years, even 10 years, but when you talk about your faith story, you mention them. Guess what? They may need to hear that. They may be going through something you have no idea they're going through, and you may need to spur them on and just say, hey, listen, I just want you to know how pivotal that relationship, that moment was, that role that you played in my life. You'll never know what a simple thank you, how far that goes, and the impact that may have on their faith story. Because see, one of the things God uses is relationships with other followers of Jesus, people who are running in the same direction, to spur us on, to help us not give up, to build our faith. And I don't want you to miss that opportunity, and I want you to be mentioned in someone else's story. So what are you gonna do this week? Give you a number of options there. There's a number of next steps in the app, on the connection card, before you leave, before you tune out. I just encourage you to take one step this week that'll either put you in a place that you can potentially increase your chance for a providential relationship, or potentially spur someone else on. Because you'll never know what's on the other side of that. All right, let's stand. Let me pray for us. Man, God, we are so thankful for the people that you have dropped in our lives. It's actually pretty amazing when we think back to all the people that you've potentially used that have intersected our lives. At the moment, we had no idea. We had no idea the role that it would play. But looking back, we realize, man, there was almost like a divine moment that you orchestrated and that we needed. And we just want to say thank you. We just want to say thank you. Man, God, there's a lot of people that are disconnected right now. They've drifted. And God, I just pray that you help us to pay attention. Pay attention to the people that maybe even this week you're going to drop on our hearts. You're going to drop in our lives. Who need an invite to come sit with us. Maybe somebody that just moves in next door and they have no connections, and just a simple, hey, why don't you come sit with me? Come check this out. We never know what may happen on the other side of that invitation. And sometimes it takes some time, God. So help us to just trust that when we follow you in this, that even when it doesn't feel like things are happening, that God, you are using this moment. And we thank you for using us and encouraging us. And I just pray that you keep us encouraged. And we pray these things in your name, Jesus, and according to your character.